This week on RSVB Update, Maud Porky joins us to discuss the charity special effect and the accessibility of RuneScape. Also, preparations begin for Elite Dungeon 3 and The Ambassador. Plus, your questions about coins, life lessons, and working at Jagex. This is RSVB Update, episode 712, recorded Thursday, February 21st, 2019. Special effect at Double XP Weekend. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us once again for another episode of RSBNB Update. Double XP Weekend is, of course, here along with Game Blast. We're going to try and get the show out a bit early for those of you guys starting on Friday for Double XP Weekend. Normally, of course, we're out later on Friday, so if you guys are hearing this on Friday, welcome. Tanis, you're here as per usual.
That's right, Shane. I wouldn't miss it.
Yeah, it's one of your favorite podcasts of the year.
This is absolutely my favorite podcast of the year, and you know, it brings back memories. This is my first appearance was on one of these weeks, so yeah,
nice.
I wouldn't miss it for the world.
And also, speaking of first appearances, as we alluded to in the bite and on last week's podcast, we are pleased to have joining us this week from Jagex, Maud Porky, to celebrate with us this Double XP Weekend podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Shane. What a beautiful introduction as well.
Indeed. So, you know, first time being on the show can be a bit intimidating for people sometimes, and just a bit to break the ice. Tell the listeners a bit about you.
Oof. I'm usually not very good at talking about myself, but I am almost an employee for a year at Jagex now. I joined in 2018 in February somewhere. Joined as an intern, and then I'm now officially a full-time community manager. Just love talking to other people and about the game. Originally, I'm not from RuneScape. I'm from a different game, Bocklenote. But that side, I still love RuneScape. My friends forced me to play it in the past. Enjoying it very much. I like cats. I eat too many chocolate chip cookies. And that's really about it. I think those are the highlights.
All right. Excellent. So glad you could be with us this week. And, you know, this week's a patch week, and I think that's a good way to start for the Double XP Weekend. We'll be talking a bit about the main event in just a bit, but let's run through some of these patch notes for this week then. You know, the patch notes this week, I think gave a bit to everybody. Starting off in the combat section, auto-regenerate will no longer give you a message that it failed to activate if no adrenaline is available. We talked about that when that option came out. Personally, I have that turned off. How about you guys? Do you guys use that option?
Oof. I do because I don't fight anything that I really need to keep that adrenaline up at the whole, you know, consistently. I'm mostly doing Slayer, so yeah, it just helps me cut down on food.
All right.
I don't have that option. I do it manually, but that's maybe because it's one of those things, like, I still need to go through all the options, like, in my spare time in order to figure it out, really, because there's so many options that I just still learn about new options.
Yeah. Next up, prevented teleporting using a player-owned mounted amulet of glory on free-to-play worlds. That would be an interesting side effect for people who are free-to-play and somehow wind up in a POH. I don't even know how that would be possible. I guess because people have the ability to go into a POH and have level 5 of all the member skills in free-to-play now. So
yeah, now someone must have broke it somewhere.
Yeah, figured it out. Players can use magic notepaper to note dark bows. You couldn't before. That's a bit of an odd catch.
Yeah,
it's half of the patch note at times are like that. Sometimes players find something crazy, and then we are just like, sure, we'll make that possible. We didn't think about that earlier.
Yeah, and I mean, I have to wonder when it comes to the dark bows, because the dark bows are dark beasts, and I mean, whenever I go fight dark beasts, there's enough of an inventory in place that I don't need to note things. But I mean, I guess if you're camping there for hours on end, that might become an issue.
It's better now if you're using the spring cleaner, because it's going to automatically alk the rune items for you before you needed paper. Because, okay. Yeah, you could, or a yak, but I mean, no one has time for that, right? That's used to paper.
And speaking, of course, of spring cleaner, we do continue to see fixes to the mining and smithing rework. First update of the year, redefining what RuneScape is, probably, in those two skills. The Artisan's Workshop Respect Enhancer will now consume one charge and double the respect for each 0.25 respect earned when an item is made in the workshop. And this is a good one coming in for double XP weekend. And I think anybody who's smithing probably wants to be doing it in the Artisan Workshop, because you build that respect up and you get some nice bonuses along the way.
Yeah, I wouldn't see why you would do it anywhere else. Plus, you're going to get the Luminite bonus too while you're there, so there would be no reason to smith anywhere else really this weekend.
Yeah, I agree. Ore boxes can now be used on a deposit box in a similar fashion to Spirit Gem Bag or a Coal Bag to empty the ore box's contents into your bank without depositing the ore box. Yes.
This was one of my favorite ones for this week.
Sorry, what was that?
This was one of my more favorite ones of this week.
Yeah, me too. You know, I heard from numerous players after the Mining and Smithing rework came out that this needed to be a thing, and I assume you guys heard that as well, and hence why we're seeing it. So... options to toggle off getting sedimentary, igneous, and metamorphic geodes have been added to the settings interface.
That's great, actually.
Okay.
I mean, well, I know, Shane, I know toggle, but I don't need one spirit shard sometimes. I don't.
Hey, but it's double XP weekend. You're going to need those for your summoning.
Yeah, but...
So is it that you'd like to save your inventory space?
Yeah. I think that's what the idea behind it is. Personally, I don't like this toggle for this option because it is taking away a part of the mining and smithing rework gameplay.
But, that's true.
The thing is, it doesn't hurt anyone, does it? Like, no, I personally really like to get those ores. I'm like, ooh, I get something new.
Right. And see, it's good to it's good that it's an option rather than just making the blanket outright decision on this, because, you know, you don't want to gate people away from that. And the metamorphic geodes can be pretty interesting on their own sometimes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, those are the ones you want, right?
Yeah, whenever they arrive.
You don't really want the other ones quite so much because, I mean, you're not going to really, like I said, you're going to get like a spirit shard or a Sapphire or something like that.
Yeah. And, you know, another thing I talked about in an Informer article, which you can find at informer.rsmovie.com on this, is that instead of doing this, an option might have been to bring in a pocket or a sigil item that eats these when you get them. But, of course, extra development time and putting on a toggle fixes the problem straight away. Next up, in-progress smithing items can now be used on forges to heat them up instead of the displaying the nothing interesting happens message. And, you know, this is something I tried when I had an in-progress smithing item. I tried to use it on a forge, and I got that. So, nice interaction boost. Now a big one, you know, changing what was the best mining XP in the game. Mining crablets no longer deplete stamina, so they can be mined AFK as before. Their hit points have been lowered so that a crablet is typically mined in a little under 5 minutes, and the XP for mining these crablets has also been reduced to compensate. Now, I don't have rune metrics, and I don't have an arc island with gold and salt, so I can't comment on what the XP rate for these is this week, but I'm assuming they wouldn't be hurt that much. Do either of you guys have any insight on what the XP might have been knocked down to?
I don't know what it would have been knocked down to, but I know there's probably some people that it hurt a little bit. Because it, yeah, like you said, Shane, it's the best, or it was the best XP in the game.
Yeah.
So this is most like, I believe, and please tell me if I'm wrong, like one of the reasons we kind of make this change is because we got a lot of feedback. It's like in the past, it was quite AFK, if I recall it correctly. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't anymore, and that's kind of what was a bit of a complaint from players. So we've kind of tried and find the middle ground there.
Okay. That makes sense then. And, you know, that's actually a very good insight because, you know, of course, if you weren't here, we wouldn't have got that insight. And it actually makes a lot of sense when you say it that way.
Hopefully, yeah. I'm able to add a whole new perspective to it for a week.
That's great. Yeah, I'm familiar with the arc being like it's not usually something people really love to do a lot of times. I could see why they'd be doing it AFK. At the same time, for those skillers that are really into the best rates possible, a lot of us knew hit the arc. You know, like we knew that if there was a competition going on, you want to be in the arc, that kind of thing. So, yeah, I think that's a fair change then.
All right, moving on to some other general changes. Players will now receive a unique message when damage-reducing items such as the Defender's or War Priest armor proc from environmental damage. That doesn't affect me, but okay.
Yeah. Everyone loves their messages and scores. It's an ongoing battle. Like, I just want to point that out. Sometimes we have to remove messages because it's not good enough, and then people want them to be able to be muted. Or just filter those out. I mean, it's always an interesting one, and we just
Try and balance that. The discussion for me comes in as to what is filtered and what is not filtered. I play my game with game messages filtered, and I just discovered a few weeks ago that when you disassemble something, if you have all the game messages on, it tells you what exact components you got. If we were on this discussion topic and we were going somewhere with this, it would be nice in the future if you could choose what messages were filtered, but I imagine that would be quite a gargantuan task.
It would be a massive task. I do know we had this, like, a lot of the messages that we filter out and don't filter out is usually something that gets decided by the ninja team. Mod Lepcode, who is currently part of the ninja team, came across as well. It's like, can we just not do it on a message-to-message basis? And it would realistically be possible, but it's going to take a massive amount of work. But then also the next question is, how are you going to allow players to actually manage that, right?
Yeah.
Because there are over thousands and thousands of messages in the game that you can get at various times. Which one should you filter away and how can you manage that?
And if you were to present the players with a huge list, that's just not good.
I don't think we if it were like 30 options, it's not ideal, would be possible, but there are over thousands of them. So,
and can I add, Shane?
Huh?
I said, can I add something here?
Yeah,
Shane?
Please, of course.
Something that I never thought about, even as familiar as I am with game accessibility, something I learned this week is those game messages are actually really important for hearing-related disabilities. It helps those people be able to take in that information that other people may be taken in through other ways. So they're actually an important part of the accessibility front, even though you probably wouldn't think of it that way at first glance.
Yeah. And, you know, since we're on that and we'll talk more about it later, we, as Tanis said in pre-show, you know, we have RuneScape here and, you know, people might knock you guys for doing something wrong. It seems like that happens every other week or something, right? But when it comes down to it, you guys have one of the most accessible games out there for folks with disabilities of sorts. So that's something you guys need to pat yourselves on the back with.
Yeah.
That back.
Thank you very much for that.
And whatnot. So, continuing with the patch notes, an issue causing some players to not be able to combine the Death, Law, and Blood ethereal leg pieces has been fixed. And the big one of the week, the Divine-O-Matic Vacuum, is now always lost on death.
This was an interesting one this week, wasn't it?
Yeah, and, you know, it doesn't affect me because I don't do divination in the wilderness, but I know plenty of people who do who are a little bit scared this week.
I can see the reasoning behind it, but I don't agree with it at all because, look, let me just put my bias out there. I'm not into PKing. I don't really agree with it very much. I think if you want to PK, go to the duel arena. Don't be a troll and kill some skiller because that's kind of just trolling. And now, when you lose your Divine-O-Matic, that is not an easy thing to just replace. I see this happened to me right when it came out, and I was doing that out there, and then I don't remember. I got Scald accidentally somehow. Like, I didn't mean to. And I lost my Divine-O-Matic. And I don't remember if it was a matter of how I had my charges set up or whatever. But it took a while for me to get it back. Like, I had to go buy a bunch of stuff and break this stuff down. And it's not an easy process.
It was a tricky one. Like, I think just to on the outside a bit, like whether it's a good or a bad change, like I never invested myself enough in Divine-O-Matic of divination and the Divine-O-Matic. But like we should have communicated this change much better. And it's partially my fault. I didn't see this in advance. I just received it as a patch note, so I just added it to the list of the patch notes, right?
Right.
But it was actually like a change to make the overall experience more in sync and better, and like hopefully for the better of the game in the end. Which actually Motshawney later clarified that for us with a massive post on Reddit. So I don't know if you guys seen that post.
No, we have not.
I have not.
Okay, so there's like a post about it, why we did it and what we should change for our process, which is actually quite an interesting read. It shows a bit of how we work internally. But in the end, it came down, we did it for the game integrity, and we're going to see if we can communicate those better and even let you guys know in advance so we can get some feedback, and maybe based on the feedback we get when we announce those changes earlier, make small adjustments.
You know,
it is a tricky one.
The reason I thought this was coming in is because I know we have the changes next month coming to the Wilderness Bounty Hunter and whatnot. So, of course, bringing more people into the Wilderness. And if you're going to have, I assume, different items there with that, those items might be dropped as well. So, of course, kind of synchronizing the in-game experience on that. So,
yeah, I mean, I understand it's the risk-reward type of thing, but I don't know. Maybe it's my own personal bias. I don't know. I don't know why people don't do. What's that mini game out there, Shane? It's kind of like, it's not a raid. It's Warbands. Like, Warbands. You know, do Warbands. You want to kill each other. That's cool. Like, why are you killing me, man?
No.
I'm just trying to make a living. Come on.
And
there's a fun little story. Just I like telling anecdotes.
Please.
I think it was about 2 weeks ago. I was at work and I was doing some mining and smithing, and I was trying to get up to like 85 or whatever it was. Yeah, 85 it is. I'm currently working on that. And before that, I had to mine. There was a stone that I needed to mine in the Wilderness. And usually, like you guys are saying, there's nobody in the Wilderness. So I actually went to the near Wilderness. I went to the mining ores, to the ores. I actually forgot which ores are. Started mining them, and like the first three or four runs went perfectly fine. And then the fifth run I was doing then, of course, because I'm also working at the same time. I log out of lore and log in and whatever. But I actually got killed once, so I lost everything. So I was nice. I looked up who it was. I sent him a message, and he was like, "No, I'm not going to give your stuff back." I felt the pain of dying as a skiller while you're doing nobody any harm in the Wilderness. And to be fair, like I am fully aware that I can die in the Wilderness, but it's still a bit of a sore point. But it's just like, we can have that in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, if anybody does lose your Divine-O-Matic, to recap, it's 180 metallic parts, 750 smooth, and 120 powerful components to rebuild one. It's fine. Moving on. Next up, Phil and Delphi will now have something to say once the post-quest content is completed after the new Chef's Assistant quest. They were oddly quiet beforehand. And of course, fun fact with this one, for anybody who wasn't listening last week, I didn't get the reference to Phil and Delphi until I said it on the podcast. Of course, Philadelphia cream cheese. Amazing quest. If you guys have not already done it, would highly recommend you head out and take a look. We love those little quests, especially bottle quest. Quest week is a huge event for us here at the podcast. So, All right. Yeah.
Needle skips.
Oh, God.
That's all I can say is needle skips.
What's the deal with needle skips, if I may ask?
I think it was one of the longest in...
It was our longest podcast episode ever.
Yeah. Really?
Uh-huh.
Okay, well, that's fun.
Yeah, we love
it. It is one of the quests that I finished the quickest.
Okay. And see, I dedicated the entire amount of time to that quest, finding most everything for it. So it was such a good quest because you could, like you said, go through it in a few minutes or very quickly. But on the other hand, you could go very, very deep into the lore behind it and all the various words.
It was a very lore heavy quest.
Yeah. So it was amazing with the new mechanics and whatnot. And we gave it a solid 5 out of 5. And what we typically do when it comes to quests is quests don't get 5 out of 5 unless they introduce a new major story point or they shake the foundation of what quests can be. And this one did that, hence why I got the 5 out of 5. At least that's the way I give my ratings out. But anyways.
Shane's a stickler.
Continuing on with the patch notes, various UI improvements and bugs have been fixed after the launch of the PlayerUnknown Ports interface reskin. The interface icons for Gunpowder and Black Slate have been corrected. Previously, they were swapped. The captain's log once again defaults to ship status when opened. Some text on the ship's interface has been moved. Crew information has been moved to the right-hand side, so you can still see the resources. That's good. That one annoyed me. The crew drop-down is now taller, so the information fits better inside the frame. Made text boxes bigger on ship parts to improve visibility. Move 3D captain heads down 10 pixels on the crew roster interface. Love the detail there, 10 pixels. Mm-hmm. And added a divider line in the voyage frame to separate the name of the voyage from the information. And finally resized the voyage interface down slightly. And of course, most of these do help the experience on mobile. So I'm glad that these were able to be refined and whatnot going forward this week for the folks on desktop as well.
Yeah, and the majority of these were actually like pointed out by the community themselves. Like when we released it, it was indeed to like A, make it in sync with our existing UI, but at the same time, it was also to improve it for mobile. And with that, of course, there were quite a few issues that were kindly highlighted to us by the community. And more that went in and ended those. And you mentioned, like, oh, being very precise, 10 pixels isn't even that bad. Like, 10 pixels you can actually noticeably see,
but we've
changed things for, like, 1 or 2 pixels in the past.
Yeah.
And that is because, like, more that I myself, quite a bit as well, we like our interfaces, and we want them to be perfect, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
so if it's,
pixel
like,
perfect.
Offset by 1 pixel, we might actually change it.
Yeah, and you know, I see that too. If something's not lined up correctly, it's fine until you don't notice it, so to speak. But once you notice it, you cannot unsee.
You cannot unsee it.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And it is often like if something doesn't look quite right, but you don't know what it is, it might just be something for like 1 pixel. You will not find it out. It just makes you feel a little bit odd inside.
Yep. Yeah. That's an itch that bothers me too.
Exactly.
All right. Other patch notes this week that we got. Additional checks have been implemented to try and minimize the chance for clues to swap or progress into the same clue. I've had this a few times before, specifically with hard clues where you get the same clue back to back. I mean, I don't complain about it, but it did feel a little bit less random. And I think it's good to bring these updates out a year after the clue scroll rework. That was a good one too.
That was perfectly timed, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. I think clue scrolls are something that are integral to the game, and I'm not sure whether people do them today for the fun aspect behind them or if they do them for the chance of getting, you know, a die or maybe even just fortunate components. I'm not sure where the majority is on that, but the fact that they fill multiple niches is a sign of a good update. Or a good piece of content, mm-hmm. rather. Brought summoning pouch and scroll trade-in interfaces up to standard. As we've been talking about before, this is the progression towards a more unified interface look for RuneScape. And, you know, I don't think there's much else to say on that one.
Well, that one's perfect. You talk about perfect timing. That's perfect timing. What do you think people's going to be doing this weekend, Shane?
Oh, yeah, summoning, right.
Yeah, and you can mess that up on the trade-in. I've done it before.
Oh,
so
okay.
This is really good. Like it's a lot better than what it seems like on its surface. Like this is gonna save some people like a lot of heartache.
All right. Scan clue scrolls will now reopen again when leaving a magic carpet ride.
Mm-hmm.
Using clue scrolls on Zyda now allows you to downgrade more than one clue scroll at a time up to the normal cap of 25 clues of the target tier. That's good. I like that we can do this bulk now. I personally don't downgrade myself, but I know people who do. So that's good.
Mm-hmm.
And they have fixed inverted checks on 6 hard clues, which if you now have the requirement for them, they will appear when doing hard clues. Details below include the riddle for General Bentnose, you must have completed Dragon Slayer. The riddle for Lord Ireworth, must have completed the Underground Pass. Riddle for Crossroads and etc. Fremenic Trials. Riddle for Shadows of Morden, have access to Mauritania. Riddle for Shiloh Village, of course, requires access to Shiloh Village. And the riddle for the Ranging Guild requires level 40 ranged, as we expect for the Ranging Guild. So...
Mm-hmm.
Nice batch of little clue scroll updates. That clue scroll rework was a year ago. And I think, Tanis, that was our first update of 2018 that kind of set us on the path that we're on now, right?
Well, I mean, the mining and smithing.
Of 2018. Was that also?
That was in February.
Okay.
And clue scrolls came out right at the beginning of March.
Okay. So hence.
That's correct. Clue scrolls. Was it March? I think it was still February.
I think it was the last week of February because
I
remember dealing with some stuff and I remember talking about clue scrolls at the exact same time last year.
I bet it hit right after DXP.
Yeah, something like that.
Okay. Right. Oh. Okay.
That would make sense probably.
No, just like the Elite Dungeon 3 is going to hit right after double
exactly.
XP
yeah.
weekend.
We'd like to use deep dive things to that. We'd like to use dive things to like a game blast or whatever that's like. Giving the players that coming back for WXP weekend maybe another reason to stick around and play this a cool, nice new piece of content usually.
Uh-huh. That's very good.
It works because I think your favorite update of 2018, Shane, came out the day after WXP weekend.
With Player Own Farm. Yeah.
And one of the best changes, I think, in the last several years was Revolution came in the day after Game Blast. So that's another one that I thought was huge.
Yeah. Proper structuring of updates is great. And, you know, updates being proper also does, of course, factor into accessibility and whatnot. And that's what this weekend is going to be all about when it comes to Game Blast. And, you know, I think the majority of folks out there are going to be worried about double XP and who's going to get the most XP and what 120s or 99s you're going to get. But, of course, we can't forget Double XP Weekend's Game Blast festivities and the charity special effect. So we're going to have a bit of a chat about this right now. And so let's just start off from the top of this for listeners who might not have been around for a previous Game Blast Double XP Weekend tied to special effect. What exactly, Mr. Porky, is Game Blast and special effect?
So Special Effect is a lovely charity that tries to help or allow disabled gamers with a disability to play the games that they love again. So it might be hard to, for example, hold a controller or whatever, and then they will come over and see if they can come up with a very cool way that you can just play your favorite game, whether it's like RuneScape, Minecraft, whatever it is, they'll try everything they can to make you play and love games again, really, because many people like games, and if you can't do something you like, it can be very annoying. And they try to use eye tracking, all kinds of buttons and kinds of things just to allow you and play games again, really. That is like special effect. And then Game Blast is a weekend, usually in February, I believe. It's always been in February, I think, the last week of February. And then it's all about raising money for special effect and doing something special and going the extra mile and get awareness for special effect and generate money for them. Not generate is not the nice word for that, but like try and raise. That's the word I was looking for. Raise as much money for them as possible.
And, you know, Jagex has a tremendous history of working with special effect and supporting Game Blast. I think you guys are up to the hundreds of thousands of dollars raised, probably north of the millions too after this year. And it's a tremendous event.
So I think our history dates back to 2014, I hope. I think it does. And then we just allowed people to – we created the Well of Goodwill, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then in return, you could get something from the Settlement General store. And then the year after, we went for a 24-hour stream instead. So we did that alongside the Well again, in which we raised about £50,000, I believe. And then we did all kinds of crazy challenges and everything, like the usual you see on those charity streams, like waxing your legs and arms, or drinking foul smoothies, or like doing a random race through the office, those kind of things. And then I think we skipped in 2016 and 17, and then we did one last year. And in that one, I think that's the one we raised the most amount of money, which was almost £100,000, I believe.
I think that sounds
which is right. Really cool.
Yeah.
That was actually the Game Blast I participated in myself as a player then. It was just before I joined. I was like, I'm going to work for you guys. Can I not already show up at Game Blast, show my support to special effect, and have a very good weekend? Because it's also a nice way to learn my colleagues. So that's what we did in 2018. And then now we are in 2019, and we are not organizing Game Blast ourselves this year, but we are supporting a lovely group of content creators and people within our community to make Game Blast as big as possible within the RuneScape community and raise as much money for special effects.
Excellent. And one question I want to ask you, and I'm going to ask Tanis as well, and we'll get a bit of Tanis's story in with this, but Montporky, why is Game Blast important to you as either a player or a Jagex moderator?
Well, I think it always has to be. It needs to relate to you a little bit, and like because I work at Jagex, we encounter countless of peoples and people with disabilities as well, and they all have like a very unique story about why they love RuneScape, or why they love a game, or whatever it is. And I think these are very inspirational. And I know when I grew up as a kid, like I love certain computer games and everything. That's kind of why I'm working at Game Studio as well, maybe. And I've got very fond memories of the games I played and the games I played with my friend. I'm very grateful that I actually had that. And if you realize that there are people out there that don't have that, I think that's sad. And I think we should try and deliver everyone that, really. That's kind of why I really like the charity and why it's important to me.
All right. Tanis, I know we've talked about before, and we've talked about in numerous Informer articles, but could you just summarize why this is so important to you and what the charity means to you, since you do have a personal connection?
Yeah, you know, I can relate. I can really, really relate to wanting to play games, growing up playing games, right? But let me start at the beginning. A lot of our listeners know that I am legally blind, but for those of you who don't, that means that I have some sight, but I'm blind enough. I'm considered blind, right? So I use different software, speech to text, screen readers, magnifiers, stuff like that. And but I didn't start off that way because I have a genetic eye disease called Stargardt's. So that usually hits you when you're mid to late teens and will progress from there. So like I said, I grew up as a gamer. I mean, I started with Atari and went into Nintendo and, you know, every console, you know, there on out until I started losing my sight and I couldn't really play very well anymore. And that's when I was in college and began to learn a lot more about accessibility features and how to use different softwares and things like that. And that's actually how I found RuneScape was at that time. This was pre Windows 7, so there wasn't there was no like what do you call that, Shane? In system, like a native, there was not a native magnifier, right? So you had to have a third party software, and it's pretty expensive software, right? The problem was that didn't work when you would start like a game. So like I want to try World of Warcraft because I have Zoom Text now and I'll be able to play it. And I tried it and it didn't work. So I'm like, oh no, what do I do? And through just looking around, I find out about RuneScape. So RuneScape was browser based, which means that I could use my software with it. And so, I mean, I played maybe a day or two, finished Cook's Assistant and got membership that fast. And so like I can't understand what every person with every kind of disability, but I do understand like the struggle, and I do, you know, I do know how it can help you kind of come out of your shell and be able to talk to people and socialize. And it's just a really great thing. It's a great charity, and I just wholeheartedly support them.
And I know you've also, I think you also had a dialogue with Special Effect before too about your specific case, haven't you?
Yes, I did last year. I talked with them, and they're a wonderful organization. They really are. I didn't get to personally speak with Dr. Donegan, but speaking with a special effect representative while I was streaming last year, and they're just the kindest people ever. You know, I was trying to acquire a device that's called eSight, which is special digital glasses. Basically allows me to magnify things. It's almost like if you're familiar with the CCTV, it's being able to kind of wear your CCTV. And what it does is it lets you use a computer or a tablet or even watch TV without a magnifier. Because it's using, you know, like it's magnifying. So what's nice about that is you can walk in, you know, if you're at school, you can walk into a computer lab and use that computer if you have eSight. Whereas in my experience, I would always have to find the accessible lab, you know, and go to a completely different place that had the stuff that I could use. So, yeah, we talked about that. And it wasn't really something that that they could do at the time. But like I said, they're wonderful, and everyone is so kind, and it was a great experience. Even though it couldn't help me in my personal situation, it was still a great experience to go through and to learn and to find out more about the organization.
There's also, yeah, thank you for that story, by the way. I find it very, I really appreciate that you share that. I find that, like, I think it even makes the message and everything about that, what we're talking about here, more special. Am I also correct to say, you probably know that better than I do, that a Special Effect helped Xbox design the adaptive controller?
They did. And they did that. And And some of the things that I personally think is important and really cool is not only do some of the things that they've done to help people be able to play games, some of those technologies are actually far-reaching, and they've been groundbreaking for the public at large. Their eye tracking software has allowed people who can't communicate, who are essentially trapped in their own bodies. You know, they can't communicate in any way, and that eye tracking software has been able to help them be able to communicate for the first time. That's something that anybody in that situation can benefit from that. You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know. Exactly.
They're breaking down walls, and this is something that I always like to point back to is this is the Apollo space program. So many technologies were developed for that eventually percolated down into the public. That, you know, you need to have research groups. You need to have groups like NASA back in the day or Special Effect today when it comes to accessibility, constantly pushing the boundary and bringing these pieces of technology down to the base level so that everybody can access them. I remember when we saw the tech news from Microsoft that they were working on that adaptive controller, and we scrolled through the list, and lo and behold, Special Effect is involved in that. And that's something we had a great time discussing on the podcast here because of the history with Special Effect and RuneScape, and of course just the fact that Microsoft is getting behind something like this. And for anybody out there who doesn't know, you can take any Xbox controller and plug it into a Windows PC and it will just work, and that's got to be the same for the adaptive controller too.
It's just a wonderful organization that I would love, you know, I will do anything to help, essentially, because, sometimes games are more than just games, especially for people who have to deal with challenges sometimes. Because when I'm in RuneScape, it doesn't matter. I'm on an equal field. I might not be able to be as quick or play as good, and accessibility is an issue, yeah, sometimes, but at the end of the day, I'm just some other guy. And you're not being judged by what you look like, or, you know, no one sees my cane, you know, no one sees my east side or anything like that. They don't really know. And that's something that I think really, really affects, adolescents even more than an adult, because they're able to feel like they're part of the group, and they're interacting, and they're not being judged for because they're in a wheelchair or whatever, you know, the case may be. So gaming gives you an outlet to be out and to experience things that you otherwise couldn't. And so that's another reason I support them as much as I do.
It is a way to escape the real life a little bit at times. Right, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Yep.
And, you know, when it comes down to it, equal footing. Because, you know, it can be hard when you're playing a video game that I'm greatly extrapolating this to something that is probably trivial and is trivial, is that, you know, like, let's just say you have a broken finger or something, you are not going to be able to perform as you normally would. Then if you compare that to folks like yourself, Tanis, or other issues as well, you are going to be in a situation where you feel as though that you aren't on equal footing. And if you can bring that back to being on equal footing, I can only imagine the sense of empowerment that must bring you.
Well, look what it's done for me, Shane. I mean, I went from not even being able to play a computer game to being the co-host on RSBNB Update. So it's been a long journey, but I mean, I'm proud of that, you know, like I'm really proud of that.
I mean, you know, I never really thought of it that way, but that's a very good point. So, and, you know, when it comes to Double XP Weekend, yes, everybody's going to be focusing on XP, but you can also have a look at any of the live streams that are happening. Tanis, when are you going live tomorrow?
So tomorrow, I'm going to be going live from 9 to 3, and a special thing that I'm doing tomorrow is I am going to basically strip off all of the bells and whistles that I normally put on a stream. And I, you know, all of the extras, we're going to strip it down and I'm going to show you what it looks like when I play. Because it's a different experience. A magnifier has been a wonderful tool for me. It's allowed me to be able to play the game. Without it, I probably couldn't. If I didn't have my glasses too, but it narrows your field of view, right? I mean, just by definition. And so, I think it's interesting for people to see that how if I'm fighting, I have to like strategically place my things in my interface so that I can actually see them because my field of view is so much smaller.
Yeah, we learned about that with Elite Dungeon 1.
Oh, man. Yeah, right? Yeah, that's what I got told to go stand in the corner and eat. Aww. That was okay, though. I made it.
You'll be in for a treat, then, if you beat 3.
I'm sure it will. Yeah. But so yeah, that's what I'll be doing tomorrow, and I'll be raising money or trying to raise as much money as I can. Anyway, we'll have my Just Giving all hooked up and ready to go, so you'll be able to donate to Special Effect through that, and then I will also be streaming on Saturday. Now, don't hate me. I'm doing this for you, okay? I'm doing this for you, the listeners. I am going to stream a different game on Saturday because I know how hard you're working. I know what you're grinding like, and I know you have 2 monitors. So you might want to watch something else on your other monitor. So I'm going to take one for the team and maybe stream a different game that day because I'm not competing in any competitions this weekend. I'm just having fun and trying to raise money. So, yeah. So I'll be doing that Saturday evening, probably start about 6, and then go until I fall asleep.
And where can they find you on Twitch?
I am the Blind Gamer on Twitch.
And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to try and get this one out early. So for the early listeners, you might hear this and be able to pause and go listen to Tanis's live stream. But if not, I'm sure you'll have the VODs available of the RuneScape stream as well.
Oh, so, of course. Yeah.
The Blind Gamer, Tanis79, and link will also be available in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. Now, this question is a bit for Mod Porky, but what is it specifically about the RuneScape community that makes it great when it comes to this particular event with Game Blast?
Ooh, I think what makes our RuneScape community great is that we didn't announce anything about the Game Blast ourselves this year because we're not organizing one ourselves this year, sadly. But even long before that, we kind of already had like our community champions like reach out to us asking, is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Like, what's going to happen? And as soon as they kind of found out that we were not organizing one ourselves, they were suddenly like, we're going to do this ourselves. We're going to get all the best people from both RuneScape and Old School together. We're going to put like a full streaming schedule. We're going to set everything up. We're going to create some cool assets. And we're going to do it for Game Blast themselves. As a community, we're going to raise that money from everywhere. What I really like is how our community is coming together in this event. Like, we've got Folk from Old School. We've got Zuhair, who creates beautiful art at times, is helping out. We've got many RS streamers as
the
well.
RS guy.
RS and Sven. I believe, let me double check. Yeah, the RS guy is going to do a challenge while it is going on. We've got Spider-Man, and even Shawnee Owens will be doing some streaming. So it's just like how the whole community comes together. They're setting up a schedule, and that just all in aid of Special Effect and raising money, really. And then aside from that, we've also got these massive auctions, which I think the total amount is already easily over £1,000. And all these creations that based around RuneScape that gets sent to one location. We're going to put them all up on an eBay auction. We're going to allow the community to bid on those and everything. It's just wonderful to see that all come together. And then, like, if we can just amplify that message, make the efforts from those community champions who work on that become, like, really big and amplifying that, it's just good to see and go, really. Like, it's just the power that we as a community, or the RuneScape community. I think I'm outside of it myself a little bit as Jagex at times. It's just great to see how they are so passionate about things like these.
Yeah, just looking at the eBay auction right now, there's so many handcrafted RuneScape items that are going for charity. It's really a nice thing.
It really is.
So, there's a custom handmade farming cushion. Interesting.
Oh,
they're like, I believe, cushions for every single skill there.
Yeah.
And they're all really nice. I think you've got a commissioned art piece from Zuhar and even from, I have to kill myself for not remembering the name at the moment. Who makes all the beautiful cartoons?
Presley?
For RS3 mainly.
Presley? Is that the one you're thinking of?
Presley, yeah, Presley. Oh, I hope she's not listening today. I'll get in trouble for that with her. But yeah, no, everything, all these beautiful things that get created gets sort of, it's just amazing to see. And we try actively to amplify that message, luckily. I'm glad we can do that.
Excellent. So moving on from this and accessibility in RuneScape, and, you know, I'm not aware if you would have an answer to this question, but does Jagex have a working guideline on how new content can be made to be accessible?
So as far as I'm aware, because I'm a community manager myself, we do not have a very explicit guideline when it comes to the accessibility of our content. But because we've got a big mix of developers ourselves, we also have, for example, I believe we've got a few people who have some kind of color blindness or vision or of a lack of vision at times and those kinds of things. So they already help us massively to make the content accessible in that sense. And additionally, like because we have been working with special effects in the past and everything, like, we do know that people with accessibility issues at times could use some help, and we try to make the game in that sense accessible. Like, we are aware that there are people out there that could use a little bit of help making our game enjoyable for them. So we try to keep that in our minds when we are creating content, I'd say.
All right. Oh, and you know, this is exactly what we've been talking about before, because Tanis, I mean, out of all the games that you pick up, and you play a lot of games.
Yeah.
How accessible is RuneScape compared to everything?
RuneScape is one of the best in general, and it's the best MMO, without a doubt. Yeah, there's really no question with that. And I think it may even become an even bigger thing to keep in mind in the future, because we know RuneScape players stick with RuneScape, and we're all going to grow old together. We're all going to not hear something or not see something very well eventually, right?
Very true. Very true.
Maybe it's been a very long term plan all along. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. But no, it is really well. It's really good. There's always places that can be improved. And, you know, I actually go into that pretty thoroughly in this month's article. And that should be up.
That will be up. That will be up right after we record this. So that'll be definitely be up for anybody listening to this at informer.rsbnb.com.
Out of curiosity, if there's one thing you could change about, like, make something more accessible, what's that one thing you would actually change right now?
Tanis, away you go.
the one thing that I would do would give some kind of audio quest, like some kind of either speech to text dialogue, read dialogue, voiced. It doesn't have to be voice acted. Like I'm not asking for that. I just want to experience the lore and not struggle by having to try to read it, because everything that I read is done through audio. And so if there was any way possible, if I could wave a wand, that would be it. And I would make a new account and play all the quests over again.
Is it then, because does the text to speech things you use or tools you use, do they not read the RuneScape text at all?
No, unfortunately, they won't do anything in game like that. So, Okay. Yeah, that's unfortunate. That's what I would change though. And I've said on the show many times, I'm like, I've told Shane, I'm like, I just pull someone out of and record them reading the dialogue boxes. Like I don't care like who it is.
But I've been told that all the text in game is like longer than like 7 Bibles.
Oh wow! Holy cow! I didn't know that.
So if we have to read out 7 Bibles, then I think we're going to be here for a while.
Yeah. Then maybe the solution would be to find a way that a screen reader would be able to cover that, because that would be wonderful.
Yeah, Malt Purpur. I had a very interesting chat with her. I'm just going to look that up very quickly. She had a question from someone if the game could be translated to Dutch. And she had a very in-depth reply about that. And it was basically like, if we were to translate it to Dutch, like, and a translator would be working on it, it would take, there you go, I found a thread, let me find it. If I scroll down, she did all the maths. Just some stats, the game has roughly 5.7 million words, and if you were to translate it, you can do about 2,500 words on average a day, and that would mean it would take you over 6.5 years, or six and a quarter of a year, to then just translate the game, then you need to keep in mind that person doesn't take a single day off.
Jeez.
So yeah. That's a lot of text that needs to be speeched and everything. But yeah, like you said, well, I think there's maybe some room one day to go for a text-to-speech thing.
Yeah, or like I said, at the least, being able to use... I use a free screen reader called NVDA, and basically you just hover your mouse over, and instead of getting mouse over text, it will do text-to-speech. If I could use that, I would be happy. You know, just anything where I didn't have to like try to struggle to read it, because that's what it slows me down, and it takes me out of the immersion of the game when I'm doing a quest. And I believe me, I understand the constraints that that you're under, and I know that we're a pretty small community. Like I do get that, and but hey. It was a wish, so that was my wish.
What was the software you used called again?
NVDA screen reader. It's a free version of a screen reader. Yeah.
Oh, NVDA. Okay.
Yeah, because I'm cheap and I didn't want to pay for something that I could get for free.
We were talking pre-show about you guys like Dutch people, so I imagine they've also told you that we as Dutch people can be cheapskates at times.
Yeah,
I definitely
consider myself one of those, so I can absolutely understand you.
Every Dutch person I've met who plays RuneScape, and this might be a limited set, also speaks really good English. So there's that too.
That's thank you very much for that. I think we are good. We do have our Dutch accent at times, though. But
yeah, I can hear a bit of that, but it's great. And so, Tanis, is there anything else you'd like to mention before we move on to the content showcase from Elite Dungeon 3 in terms of accessibility? Or
you know, I just want to touch on, like, and this is from a visually impaired person's perspective. I can't tell you personally about other other things, although I do try to cover that a little bit more in the article, because Special Effect actually provides a wish list for developers. Well, it's for everybody. It's accessible to everybody, right? But it's especially hoping that developers will see it and read it and take that into consideration. But I want to touch on just a few things that RuneScape does, and they do it very, very well, and it's made a huge difference for me. And number one is the movable interface. Like, that changed everything for me. I mean, overnight, I was able to do the kiln and things that I could never do before, because I could only see either my character or my inventory or my action bar, right? I couldn't see all of them at the same time. And there weren't keybinds like that at the time. So, that was a huge, huge thing for me. Another thing that I'm really thankful for, a more recent addition, is the skyboxes. That helps create a high contrast in a lot of ways. So when you go to certain areas of the game where, like, say that I go to the northern part where it's all snowy and white, mm-hmm. I am literally completely blind and can't see anything there. That's one of the reasons I used to never be able to do ice strikes, right? Even though it's a great Slayer task, I never could do it, because I couldn't see them. But with those skyboxes and those new filters, I can invert the colors, and all of a sudden, here it is, and I can see it. It's this great addition that I don't know if it was ever planned to be that way, but it doesn't matter, because it really, I mean, it's just great.
Yeah,
really, really great.
When the skybox filters came out, we called that the best accessibility update that has ever came to the game.
Yeah.
Context.
Yeah. Without a doubt.
I'm really glad you're sharing this story and telling me about it, because I never looked at the skybox filters. That, like, we recently gave it an update even, and we allowed you to do a few more things to it and fine tune a bit more. But that was just purely for people who like to do that, and I don't think we had any intention to do it for people with a visual impairment or anything. But I'm really glad it does, and when I get back into the office tomorrow, I will definitely tell the people who worked on that they are making much more of a change than they probably were imagining.
Oh yeah, I mean, it opened up areas of the game that I couldn't access before. So, I mean, it was, you know, it's a big deal. And even more recently, sound cues have been being added a little bit more into the game lately, and those are great because, okay, take for example, you know how there's red text that will pop up when you're fighting QBD and it says brace for, you know, the fire's coming. Well, I can't see that, so I get hit with fire. You know, like, it's pretty much that simple. But now you're starting to see sound cues come in, and I'd like to see this used a lot more. But the mining and smithing update actually brought in this sound cue to where you can hear the difference in the heat between what while you're smithing. So the hotter it is, it sounds different as it's cooling down. And so that kind of lets you know, because the text is kind of small. It's, you know, the mouse over text is kind of small, but I can hear it. So I always know when I'm dropping too low and when I need to hit the forge. So it's the little things like that that I don't always think that maybe that was the purpose behind it, but it has a huge effect in the end. I just want to draw some attention to what you guys are doing really well, and and maybe in the future, I know this has been mentioned on stream before, but we're a very patient group and we will wait as long as we need to. But I do hope that we have a an adjustable font size for the chat boxes someday.
The text scaling.
Yes, it would. Yeah. That would help a lot too.
We're aware it's a request not only for people with a visual impairment, but just in general people like it. So I think that's one of the things that works in the favor of yours, that like, because of course the percentage of people with a visual impairment that play a game is not massive. So it's like, let's say, for example, I think, let's say 3 or 4% of our players has a visual impairment. I don't know whether that's accurate, but then there's not much of a use case, right, from our perspective to do it. But luckily, I think at least 50% of our player base would love to see improved or would love to have the feature of text scalability purely because monitors are getting bigger and all those things. I think it is one of those things that it's definitely one day going to happen, but whether it's going to be soon or 4 or 5 years down the line, I don't know. But you definitely have the advantage that there's an advantage that not only visually impaired people want it, a lot of other people want it too.
Well, and I'm glad you said that, because I think that kind of leads us to the future of accessibility in gaming. I think is finding that ground between the two, because actually what's good for the greater community oftentimes is good for us and vice versa. Just like all the things I've mentioned above, they were all good, like for, you know, as a whole. And I think if we can think about things in those terms, we can make the game even more accessible in the future.
I think you're spot on there. I'd like to believe personally is like, sometimes you're playing a game and you're feeling like everything is perfect and everything makes sense here. And I think you can only achieve that when the audio, the visuals, and the story and the game mechanics and like it all makes sense, right?
Yeah, spot on, definitely.
If you take in some cases, one of these start away, the like if, if the music is out of sync, or if when the sound doesn't play when you are hitting it, or even if it's a little bit too late, like you are like it doesn't feel right, and it's the same with. How something looks, like if it doesn't look just right, like if it clips a little bit, or if you expect it to look different or whatever, or if it makes no sense when you're trying to use something that you can't figure out intuitively how something works, like it all makes the experience a bit less. And I think if you've got all those bits and bobs in place, then it's like, yes, I just want to keep playing this. I want to keep continuing because it feels so great to do whatever task is at hand. So there's, if that's true, and I think game developers are slowly figuring that that's a combination of these things together, it will automatically become more accessible for any gamer, really.
Yeah, and you know, if you're also wanting to extrapolate this out further, look to, you know, the core concepts, the basics of the game, and you know, is that fun? Is that going to be accessible? And if that's the case, then you can just build on that. Then I think naturally everything else will follow too. And you guys have a great foundation for that in the majority of places. So. All right, so if there's nothing else on accessibility or Game Blast, I'd just like to take a couple of moments to showcase the content showcase from this week. You guys good for that?
Yeah. Can I ask one more question?
Oh, sure.
I'm just very interested in is, like you said, like there are a few areas that we do very well at the moment for accessibility, and you've already mentioned that like the text to speech and like interface scaling would be nice. Is there also an area that you think we are not making accessible enough, or that we are doing subpar in?
Tanis?
Well, I have to go back to Quest.
Is this going to be the story about the tree?
Well, yeah, the tree and Dishonor Among Thieves, they're both... they've both been problems in the past. But I guess... to make it simpler, sometimes there are puzzles and quests that are virtually impossible for a visually impaired person to do. Essentially, because it comes down to the field of view problem. And so you might remember in Dishonor Among Thieves had this it was a cool puzzle, right? Like, but there was a lot of things going on. It was opening that vault door, right? So you had to fight skeletons while you're placing a memory fragment in someone's brain, and you also had to keep an eye on these other meters that are going down and up, and there was a lot going on. The problem is you can only focus on one of those things at a time if you're using a magnifier. But you have all of these things going on, and so it was virtually impossible to do. And that happened again with The Light Within had a tree puzzle where things were moving across the screen in a pretty quick rate. And I ran into the same problem. Now, I forget which vampire quest it was, but one of those vampire quests, it was really hard for me to tell the colors because it was a color coordinated type puzzle. So anytime there's a color coordinated puzzle, if I could get mouse over text to tell me what the color is, that would be really great. Like, you know, for a long time, Tears of Guthics, it didn't tell you what the color was. So I could never do it because I'm blue-green colorblind, right? So I could never tell. But that's been added. I think it has that now. I haven't done it in a long time. But so that's definitely something that, you know, and that's one of those that's really hard because I don't honestly know how to fix that. Special Effect does have some suggestions on how to do those types of things. But, you know, that's something that you guys would probably discuss internally that I just would be so far beyond my knowledge that I wouldn't know. But they do have some further suggestions on that wish list. Okay. Like with speed, you know, speed control or that one's a big one, or like broad difficulty scaling. But you guys actually kind of do that when it comes to the practice mode with bosses. So that's something I give you credit for too. That's what I mean. Like a lot of this stuff has been good for everyone, but it's actually affected us even more.
Okay.
Yeah. But quests are a problem sometimes.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for making me aware of that. It's like, yeah. I will never look at quests the same now. So.
I had to take screenshots of the last penguin quest we got when you had the, you know, the lights. I had to take screenshots and send them to my buddy and be like, okay, what color is this? Okay, what do I do now? That was a process. Yeah.
You got there in the end.
Yes, I did.
All right. Well, I think this was certainly illuminating discussion for all, and this is my favorite double XP weekend of the year, and I'm just so glad that we were able to go through everything here, discuss this, talk about the charities, talk about your situation, Tanis, and of course, Mod Porky. Thank you so much for your insight on this. So before we move on, I'll just take a moment and I want to showcase some of the stuff that was in this week's live stream for Elite Dungeon 3. And, you know, we're not going to go over the entire stream here, but some of these concept artworks that came out for Elite Dungeon 3 are just absolutely amazing.
Wow.
And when I look at what we have here for this concept art for Elite Dungeon 3, this is the definition to me in 2019 of what RuneScape 3 is. This is RuneScape 3 at its prime. And, you know, we talked about the skilling updates earlier in the year and the player-owned farm, mining and smithing, all being part of defining what RuneScape 3 is, and the needle skips is in with that too. And I think if you were to take a PVM angle from that, you could put Solak in there, but at the same time, you also put in these elite dungeons and how their complete narrative experiences, their lore experiences, their visual, and of course, they just sound absolutely amazing as well. So You know, for those of you guys who haven't done this yet, definitely have a look at the live stream from this week with all of the concept art from Elite Dungeon 3, which will be hitting us on Monday after Double XP weekend. And before we move on, I do want to mention in here that they do have some rather epic sounding music for Elite Dungeon 3. So let's have a listen right now.
There you go. It's actually quite tragic music for this. Wow.
You are playing a repeated animation of a poor eel thing dying.
Oh. So I think James.
So that was one theme. The next one is called Blackstone Scales, which is a bit more dramatic.
So that theme there, and there's.
So what does that give you guys vibes of when you first hear that music? What do you guys think of?
The second one, I think of EDM and cutting it up and making it like even more awesome.
Okay.
I don't know. I like it. I like them both.
Yeah.
First one's very atmospheric. Like it kind of sets the mood, you know.
Yeah. How about you, Mod Porky? What's the first feeling that the music brings you?
It's you can definitely tell there's tension in the room. I think because Mod Slippers make these pieces, or a couple of these, I know. And like it really gives a sense of tension that there is something massive going to happen here, which I really like. And then like in the second one, it's going to be a bit more up tempo, a bit more speed in there. That it's like I'm getting close to it as well. This is just. I really like the pace and everything. It makes me excited for it as well. Like it makes me aware that I need to be careful about what I'm doing, but at the same time, I want to go explore. I want to find out what's happening.
Yeah, and you know, we're actually going to have a summary of this coming on Monday with the release of this in our weekly Byte series. We're going to go through the lore because, you know, the Ambassador was theorized before, and we're finally getting it with Elite Dungeon 3 in the form of a boss. So, you know, I think there's definitely going to be some pretty big lore ramifications from this one, too. And I think that also speaks to good content design, the fact that if you're going in this for the combat experience, you'll probably get something out of it that you can be proud of. But if you're also wanting to focus on lore, you can do that as well, as we've seen that as the Elite Dungeons have progressed, the story modes have become simpler to the point where anybody who is just wanting to get all the lore can pretty much bring a friend or two and go get lore and have a laid-back experience of the same thing that the PVM types also experience too, which is really great. So
it definitely is a very lore heavy ED of early dungeon. I think there was like 2, 3, or 4 times as much text in this one.
Yeah, I remember hearing something about that on the stream. So we're gonna have our work cut out for us on next week's podcast when it comes to this, but I personally can't wait to head down there and play it because, you know, we did also, I don't know if it's going to link into what we saw in the last Pirates quest. What was that quest called?
Pieces of Eight. Yeah, I want to see if we were right or what we theorized.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Zautak, right?
Yeah. I'm curious. I got to know. Is David going to take us? I mean, I'll stand in the corner again and eat. But
yeah, I think we can arrange for that. I think we could arrange for that.
Do you eat the swordfish or do you eat the cheesecakes now in the corner?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. I might have to take a cheesecake for dessert.
a bacon top cheesecake.
Yeah. Oh.
All right. Well, if you want more of this music or you want to see more of the concept artwork, have a look at the live stream from this week. But next week, we will, of course, have full coverage of this in terms of both the Weekly Byte with a lore recap, as well as our PVM expert, David, will be joining us on the podcast to take us through the PVM side of it. And, of course, along with that, we will have all the impressive visuals. If you're not able to get down to the Elite Dungeon 3, we'll take you down there and we'll share the experience with you. So all that and more on next week's podcast. But before we move on to our listener questions for the week, I'll just take a moment to thank our Patreon supporters this week. These folks make the show possible, and we wouldn't be able to do what we're doing without everybody who supports us on Patreon. But in particular, this week, I would like to thank Ben W., Brock H., Kyle, and Zez. Thank you, all of you, for your support. And if you're wanting to learn more about our Patreon page, head on over to patreon.com/rsbnb. And what we're doing with this is we offer three tiers of support. For $1 a month, you receive a special mention in our show notes. And if you want to upgrade to $3 a month, you get a special VIP rank on Discord and a special mention on the podcast at the start of the month, as well as access to high-quality stereo AAC versions of the show. And for $5 a month, you'll receive a shout-out every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use for the clip show, which the clip show happens at the end of the year, so we're in February, so you get these at this point about 10 months early, so that's a benefit there. And we also do have our monthly bit, which will be coming to you guys next week. I will reveal the topic of this one is going to be, you ready for it, making money with skilling. That's something yeah. we couldn't have said a number of years ago, but it is indeed possible now. So making money with skilling, we're going to have a chat about that on the February monthly bit. So that'll be available exclusively to Patreon supporters. And if we reach $30 a month, we'll be doing Inside RSBNB Update, where you'll gain an inside look into how the podcast is put together, including interviews with our hosts and production team, and maybe even a sneak peek of where we record the show. And at $50 a month, we'll do our roundtable, which is on the first Saturday of each month. We'll host a roundtable discussion on anything and everything RuneScape related, hosted in Discord. And if by some freak of nature we reach $99 a month, we'll have movie night with Shane and Tannis in the RSBNB Discord, where we watch some of our favorite movies. And yeah, there'll be probably some Star Trek in there too.
So. And Star Wars.
Okay. Mod Porky, are you a fan of Star Trek?
I'm more of a Star Wars person, okay. I'm afraid.
Okay.
I never really watched Star Trek when I grew up, so.
All right. Well, there's room for both. There's room for
right. Am I still allowed to be on this podcast now?
Oh, no. We don't discriminate based on that.
I would have been kicked off a long time ago. But I like them both. So, but yeah.
Okay.
All right. So moving on to our questions of the week. So this one is from Sunset Fish. If Gielinor were to introduce a deity's face or symbol onto gold coins, who would it be? And say each region's coins were represented differently, but all currency would still be universal, of course. You know, I think that'd have to be Zaros.
Oh,
yeah, it must be, doesn't it?
Yeah, but isn't...
Well, you could also have, like, the King of Ferrok maybe on it, or what was it? Ferrok had a king, right?
Yeah, King Rold.
Yeah, King of Ferrok, maybe.
Yeah, King Rold. And, you know, I mean, I think that actually, you know, I don't know what the general RuneScape population, not necessarily our characters, would think. So maybe Zaros would be a bit of a stretch. So perhaps King Rold is the best idea. What do you think, Tannis?
Yeah, well, see, normally, I don't know how it's done in Canada or the UK, but in the US, we make sure we put dead presidents on our money. So keeping that in mind, I think we should put Guthix. Because, you know, it's Guthix. He should be on the money.
And
I like how you were going in completely different direction of what I was thinking. I was thinking, like, we live, like, in Europe, where you've got all these countries, we pay with the euro, except for the United Kingdom, because they want to be different. So we've got our euros, and then there's just, like, each country has their own version of the euro with a different icon on it. I thought that's the direction we're going, and I was like, that's usually someone who's alive, it's the king, or, like, a nice building, and not like the other way of the thing is like presidents that passed away, but I can't get where you're coming from there.
Yeah, you know, it's I guess that's the American perspective, maybe. I'm used to our money. I don't know.
Our $1 coin has a loon on it, and our $2 coin has a polar bear.
Well, don't you have like a beaver or something too? Something?
The beaver is on the nickel.
Okay.
Yeah, 5 cent piece. So, we have a sailboat on the 10 cent piece,
I'm actually very curious what's on the English money now, because I've never really looked at the coins.
I know Winston Churchill is on the five. That's all I remember. But
oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
And then we need some iconic figures, I think, for the coins.
Yeah. Okay, who would that be? Hazelmere, maybe? Or does the – see, and that's the thing. Does the general person in Lumbridge know about Hazelmere?
I wonder – but is it also like, is it, does it have to be like a famous person in RuneScape from the outside perspective like we do? Or is it like from their perspective? Because it could, might as well be Hans, right?
Yes, yeah, so
that's another one I was thinking
of. He's the first NPC.
Yes. So. Everybody knows Hans.
Okay, so we've had everything from gods to the guy who walks in circles around Lumbridge Castle.
Yeah, so why not?
You know, you could have a variety of it, too. So I think we've practically covered everything that's here. And the fact there's no single unifying option says that you need to take a bit of a stance that has everything on it, or on all the different pieces. So
Can we fit all 10 options on every single coin? That we divide it in, like, sections or something?
No, that'd be interesting. And I mean, we don't even know what's on a gold piece right now. So that could be something that could come in for the 20th anniversary. 20th anniversary gold pieces. So.
Maybe. You never know.
All right. Thank you, Sunset Fish. Hopefully that has been enlightening. Personally, I'm still going to go with either Zaros or Guthix myself as to who should appear on some of these pieces. Because I think everyone's going to be.
Sorry, finish your.
I think everybody's going to be aware of that.
Yeah. So. To be fair, I find it a very cool question. I think it's one of the best questions I've heard about RuneScape in a while. I really like this one, so thumbs up for you, Sunset Fish.
Right on. Next one from Tycho Elf. You might have seen this guy running around RuneFest Mod Porky. He was dressed up as Hazelmere this year. I don't know if you saw a Hazelmere in a quest cape at RuneFest.
Oof, that's a very good question. I've been running around in all kinds of suits myself and ran around from place to place to do work, really.
Okay.
So I think I've missed this one, sadly.
All right. Well, he says the snow here in the Nordic lands is slowly retreating to the northern regions, and with that comes spring and opportunities. As we have special guests here today, I have three questions that I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on. It's funny how we as human beings think so differently, and one of the reasons why a community can be such an interesting place. So let's turn our attention to the questions. Number one, if you had the 30 seconds of full attention from all employees at Jagex, what would you say? Number two, 5 years in the future, name one thing that has changed with yourselves and one thing that hasn't. And number three, tell us about one of your lessons throughout life. Thank you for your answers, and I hope you enjoy the great work you all bring for us. And to Mod Porky, you were awesome at RuneFest. I would have squeezed Shane like a teddy bear if he wasn't hiding behind another clan member when you made your appearance on stage.
Oh, what a lovely message. I think just to clarify, where he's probably talking about is the fact that I was the person in a beautiful dragon suit.
Yeah.
Which I absolutely love doing. He has some very tough questions for me there, actually.
Yeah, so I'll break the ice and I'll start. If I had 30 seconds from all employees at Jagex, what would I would say? And, you know, this is kind of something that an extension of what I said to Andrew at RuneFest this year, Andrew Gower. I said, thank you for making the game. This has led to many great communities, including this one that I'm a part of, RSBNB, also our clan, Clan Quest. And, you know, you guys just need to keep doing what you're doing. And, you know, there might be what's seen as tiny missteps here and there when it comes to the messaging that comes out and what Reddit and whatnot can get upset about, social media and players in general get upset about. But all of these things can just be changed with tiny, tiny little fixes. And I think with the release of the mining and smithing rework, Jagex is on the cusp of being able to do something truly groundbreaking that we haven't seen before. It's my five acts of RuneScape that I call it. So that's what I'd have to say to everyone.
Wow.
If I had the full 30 seconds.
You've already prepared your speech, apparently.
Well, it's something I've been talking about for a long time. Basically, what I see is the company in the stage of a five-act movie where, you know, we had some early troubles with the release of the Evolution of Combat, old school and whatnot, then the polling updates. But then 2018 hit things out of the park with all the skilling updates, one after another, you know, and the combat updates, basically updates that received critical acclaim from the entirety of the player base. And then you top it off with the mining and smithing rework, and this generates a huge amount of goodwill. And then what that enables the company then to do is to embark on more ambitious projects that you guys couldn't have been able to embark on in the previous years. And then it just completely evolves the game going forward into 2020. So that's my vision of where Jagex is at.
Like, it sounds very cliche because we're always supposed to say, like, oh, yeah, no, we've got some very cool things lined up and in the pipeline. But I truly think there is some cool stuff currently in the works that at some point is going to make their way to the game. So it's our job now to start delivering on what our vision is and what we want to deliver, of course. And in that sense, I'm excited to be part of that. So hopefully we can make it a very nice a 5/5 act for you.
So would you say it's something that the players probably haven't seen before and something that's going to shift the perspective of what RuneScape is?
Ooh, I think it's very hard to do something that would actually shape RuneScape in a completely different perspective. But I think it's just the plan and the thing and everything we've got in mind and what we want to do, just like, and what we are working on already. It's just there's some cool stuff down the pipeline, really.
All right. Now, obviously, you're an employee there, but if you could say one thing to everybody else that you work with for a full 30 seconds of attention, what would you say?
So just a pre-header here. I think that there is not that much I would say, because I can kind of talk to everyone I want within the office. So the majority of the things that I wanted to have said, I would have already have said. So I would probably go for a slightly more goofy thing. So I will probably go and talk about the beautiful strip buffles and why they should be in the game. And that it's like one of the things that RuneScape has always missed, and that they should just get strip buffles. And as well, that I would say that we have a very cool job. We're making a lot of people happy. And that we should keep doing that and don't get put down by angry people on Reddit if they're very negative at you. That's what I would go for.
Completely agree with that. And, you know, as part of Clan Quest, we actually have a fairly large Dutch contingent, majority of which were at RuneFest this past year. I think they would be very happy with the Stroot Waffles as well.
So if they are, like, just out of curiosity, as like a follow-up question almost for those who are listening and in your clan and who are at RuneFest. Like, at the end of RuneFest on the Saturday evening, just before everyone left, I made a group picture with about 20 other Dutch people. Were they on that picture by any chance?
I don't know. If I could see the picture, I might be able to answer the question.
I'll find the picture in the meantime, right. But then I can answer your second thing. It's like the second question Tico Elf has. 5 years in the future, name one thing that has changed with yourself and the one thing that hasn't. The one thing that has changed is probably that I'll be more cautious with everything I do and more considerate, that I've probably lost the rough edges a little bit because I am quite rough at times now. Or like, I say whatever I think, and I kind of just, if I have a goal in mind, I go for that. Which is good. It's good, but it can also be like a negative thing. So that's probably has changed. One thing that hasn't changed is probably, but won't change about me. I think my love for a sport called Korfball. It's a mix between basketball and netball. I won't explain it. I'll save everyone explaining how that sport works. But I really love that sport. It's great playing that sport. And it's very rewarding to teach other people to play that sport, really.
Okay. What was it called again?
Korfball.
Interesting. Oh, yeah. I can't say I've ever heard of that. That's something.
It is a mainly Dutch board, and it's now being picked up in England. So
nice, nice. And and one of your lessons throughout life.
So this is I think I learned this about 2 years ago. Even though, yeah, I think I learned it. There is a book I read, which is called How to Win Friends and Influence People.
I've heard of that.
It sounds very dodgy. I know it does, but it is basically a book. It is like 60 or 80 years old. It's written by Dale Carnegie. And then like in that book, there are stories about going on the back of a horse to places and everything. There, cars didn't exist, phones didn't exist, everything. But it's a book about how you kind of should interact and just talk to people, really. And that book taught me two very important things that kind of everyone always has known, but like it's good to be pointed exactly to you at some point. And that one of them is like, be kind to one another, like just always be kind, whether you like them or not. There's no need to insult them further or make them feel more pain or whatever it is. And the other one is try and imagine yourself being the other person. Because if you imagine yourself in the other's position, you are suddenly able to understand them much better. And then 9 out of 10 times you'll actually find out that there isn't that much of an issue and that you actually can get along quite nicely and you've just looked at something slightly different. I would kind of advise you to read a book and just think about life a bit easier and just talk a bit more with people. Oh, and there's one other thing I just need to mention now. I forgot about that. A lot of things in life you can't change, so just live with it and have fun, really.
That's very good advice. And, you know, I agree with you when it comes to resolving issues and disputes with people because, you know, 90% of the time it does come down to misunderstanding. And if you can match that person and you can see their perspective, you can often undo whatever the animosity was in that situation. So that's some very good mm-hmm. advice. Tanis, how about you start with numero uno?
Okay. Well, like you, Shane, I was going to say that before you did. but I would say, thank you. You know, thanks for helping me stay awake in college when I was listening to all of my research books. You know, thank you for helping me hone my leadership skills through being an officer and a client. Just thanks for all of these little, life lessons that you wouldn't think you're going to pick up in a game, but you do, you know? And I mean, that's really probably what I would say. And I would probably be starstruck and I wouldn't be able to say anything else. Maybe, can I have an application, please? That would be the other thing I said.
Careers.jagex.com, I would say. Go for that.
So, 5 years in the future. One thing that will change is I'm fairly certain I'm going to have a decent amount of gray hair by then, or white. And something that won't change, I'll still be playing RuneScape. So... Mm. Yeah. And then a lesson that I've learned, I'm going to relay something that was told to me by my father-in-law right before I got married. And he basically said, you need to remember 4 words, yes, dear, my fault. And they are words to live by. And they have served me well. Throughout my, well, gosh, I guess 14 years of marriage so far. I know it sounds cliche, but don't sweat the small stuff because most arguments are, they're over nothing. And it's something you won't remember a week later. So
Yeah, don't try not to get upset about little things that don't matter.
All right, that's your lesson in life.
That's my lesson in life.
All right.
It lines perfectly up with what I said about just deal with it and have fun a bit. I also sent the picture of the people in their general chat at the moment.
All right. I will have a look at that after. Now, for me, I think 5 years in the future, one thing that has changed with myself is obviously I don't see, and you know, this is the same answer to both the coins. So what I see in this is, I'll answer the other one first, is that I always anticipate to be doing some kind of podcast, whether it's this or something else gaming related. That will not change in 5 years. One thing that will change in 5 years, I hope, is that we'll be able to continue to refine production of this and just continue to oil the machinery that comes along with whatever podcast, this podcast that we're doing. That's number two. Number three, you know, I think this is kind of a corollary to what you guys both said, but it has to come down to that, you know, you got to be happy. And everybody can define their own happiness. Personally, one of the things that makes me happy is when I win a game, when I win an argument, when I win a debate, that kind of thing. And, you know, what this is going to sound like, and some people might say this is a cop-out, you need to find a way to pick your victories. And if that's, you know, let's just say, for example, that you're learning how to do a boss fight in RuneScape. Let's say you're constantly getting killed when you're going to fight Telos or Araxa or something. Well, rather than just trying to say that, oh, we got killed today, this is a defeat, say instead, okay, let's set a goalpost to meet a certain marker where we're going to get in this fight. And if we win in that fight, we're going to call this session today a victory. So that's my advice to everybody out there, is to find your victories and set the goalposts properly, so that you're going to be able to hopefully every day be able to go to bed and say, I had a victory today, I'm happy, and I learned something throughout that entire process.
Wasteful words.
So that's what I would have to say on that one. Now, moving on to the last set of questions from Tyler. Hi, folks, and first two questions from Mod Porky. Number one, how did you come to work for Jagex in your current position? And number two, what's one cool thing about working at Jagex that the RuneScape 3 community probably doesn't know about?
Oof. So the first one is, I already briefly mentioned it, I think, a while ago, or earlier this today, is that I actually started as an internship as a community manager as well, but for a different game, Block and Load. Jagex was reinvesting in that game, and I was playing that game already for a while. I did the weekly streams for that game, so I kind of was like the community champion in that game. And at some point, they were like, we're going to reinvest in Block and Load. And at the time, I was kind of involved in the process a little bit. And I was like, I also need to graduate from my university. Can we not do something together? And after a lot of back and forth, they allowed me to come over to Jagex and do my internship there. And ever since I did my internship there, and then Block and Load kind of faded off, didn't work that well. And now we've given it over to a lovely company called Toadman Interactive. So I switched to RuneScape a couple of months, over six now. And ever since, they've just never gotten rid of me. So I'm still around and I'm working on RuneScape and other lovely products. So that's kind of how I end up at Jagex. We do not really have work placements at the moment, sadly, or internships available. But if you genuinely want to work, I'm just going to use this as a shout out. I hope you don't mind.
Sure, that's fine.
There's a beautiful page, careers.jagex.com. And if there's something that seems like a cool job, go for it. Like, everyone thinks it's very difficult, and you need to be the top of the class, the best of the best, in order to be able to work at Jagex. And yes, of course, we want good people, but if you don't apply, you will never succeed. So if there's a cool job that seems fun, go for it, I'd say, if you really want to work at Jagex.
All right. And one thing about working at Jagex that the RS3 community doesn't know that you can share.
To be fair, one of the cool things about working a Jag that the RS3 community probably doesn't know about, I think that everyone is very kind, and that is just a bunch of goofy people working around, and we have a lot of, we are a family a little bit. It's not something you would like. It's not something I expected. I really like the fact that Jag is very lean and just a relaxed working environment. It's not about you need to do X, Y, and Z today and everything. And it's much, much more of an elaborative process that you just talk to people and resolve it. And like, there's a very relaxed atmosphere. We often go with huge groups to the kitchen, have ourselves a coffee or a hot chocolate or whatever you like. We have a bit of a talk. We talk about everything and nothing. And then we just go back to work. I think that's the one thing that I really like about JAGX. And it's also the fact, like, one of the things for me personally is that, like, helping out at events like RuneFest and those kinds of things, I find it amazing to see how everything works behind the scenes. But, yeah. I hope that satisfies the question.
That's a very good answer. And, you know, as a follow-up from that, you can see what you were saying about the laid-back atmosphere. All you need to do is look back at the 2017 Christmas video and the Player on Ports videos and all those videos that have been done in the past. And you can see that atmosphere bubbling right to the top in those productions.
Yeah, I think those videos are indeed a very good example. It's like, there are some videos and things we just make because we think that are really cool to do. So yeah, thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah, I love those two videos. All right, and for everyone now, what Pie in the Sky update would you most like to see added into RS3 at some point in its future? Examples might include the bank rework, removal of the tick system. No worries if it's very fanciful. Thanks from Tyler. I'll go first on this one, and I'm probably going to ruin some friendships here with you guys by saying this, but I would very much, Tanis, you ready for this?
Oh no, I know what you're going to say. It's going to hurt.
I would very much like to see Elemental Workshop Part 5.
You know I'm not going to be able to do that, Shane. There's going to be some crazy slide puzzle that you're killing me, Smalls.
Yeah, Elemental Workshop Part 5. Or failing that, a sequel to Enlightened Journey, which was the Captain Picard quest.
Mm.
So, those are my two. Tanis, how about you?
Okay, so
I'm struggling as well. I don't know what I would have to say yet.
Here's the more realistic one that actually might happen or could happen, maybe. I'd love a Star Wars quest. Like, give me a lightsaber.
Yeah, I was actually talking to Trekkie about this last night. Trekkie, despite his name, likes also Star Wars, and he wants to see a quest where a Wookiee comes into game.
Oh, that'd be cool. That would be cool. Yeah, that would be awesome. But Pie in the Sky is something that will never happen, but it's just kind of cool to dream about. Give me WASD controls in a first-person perspective, and that would be cool. Could you imagine walking around Gillinor, like, and actually seeing it through first-person? Like, that would be cool. So, yeah, there you go.
All right.
Oh, that's a good one, actually. So, I might have a bit of a weird one, but that's just more that I do have a computer science background, and I like tech stuff, right? Sure. So I like cool systems and things, and something that I would love to have is like a very smart system or something that's like based on artificial intelligence and things in the game that just makes you have a really good time. Like, for example, Candy Crush makes the game more difficult or easier depending on what kind of player you are and those kind of things. And having something like that, just the the technique of something like that and how something would work like that, that makes my computer science heart go a bit faster.
Oh, I completely agree with that. That's my background as well. And you know, I think when it comes down to it, maybe one of the first places that could be tried would be some kind of adaptive boss fight, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, but yeah, for example, I think it could also maybe be used on a tutorial, whatever it is. Like, it has so many applications that it's like it's just an endless world. But I think it's I don't know. I don't think that's it's a difficult thing to do, I guess.
All right, that's a good question, and I can imagine many in our listener base will also enjoy that, because I know we do have a few of those out there as well. If you guys want to send questions in for next week, you can email them to questions@rsbnb.com or leave us a DM or mention on Twitter @rsbnb. Alrighty, so moving into tech news right now this week. Samsung foldable phone, $1,980, available April 26th.
So when you say foldable phone, are we talking a flip phone?
No, it's a phone. Like, it's a phone.
Like, are we going vintage? Like, is this retro? Like, is this the new hipster phone for $2,000?
It converts into a tablet.
Kind of, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I've seen it, and I still need to figure this out. But like, I like the idea of it being able to fold open and close it, really, so you have a tablet and not. But does that mean it has, like, three screens, so to speak? Because if you fold it, the two screens are on the inside, which form the one big screen. Is it then, like, a case? Or is there also, like, a screen on the outside?
There's a screen on the outside. So when you open it up, you have the tablet. But when you fold it up on what would be the back left of it, you have another screen that works as though it's a traditional phone.
So you have three screens, basically, on it.
Yeah. You see the issue with this, though. I don't know about you, but do you like your electronics to be thin or thick? Because this makes the phone really thick.
So I'm actually a fan of having – I prefer a thicker phone that is smaller over a bigger phone that's thin.
That makes sense, because it's easier to pick up than and hold in your hand.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what we're looking at – for this is a 7.3-inch flex display, and it is in a screen ratio of 4.2 to 3. So the tablet is 7.3 inches, but when you fold it, it goes down to a 4.6-inch 12x9 display, just to give you an idea of the proportions on this. And
imagine having to play RuneScape on it.
You know, that's actually something that this might actually be a good use case for, because, you know, if you're just out and about and you're on your phone and you want to load up RuneScape Mobile, you can go straight into tablet mode with 7.3-inch display. And I'd imagine that would make it a lot easier to play than it would be on a 4.6-inch 12x9 display. So, I mean,
there's
that. You guys think... You guys think this is a gimmick, or you think this is the future?
Oh, I hope not.
I feel like it's a gimmick, but I'm afraid it's going to stay.
Yeah, I'm in your boat as well on that.
Really? See, I would be more afraid of that if it was Apple, but I'm not so worried with it being Samsung.
Well,
I mean, nothing against Samsung, it's just, you know...
I do know that Huawei is working on it. I don't know. Apple, I believe, is working on it. And you've got like a few other phone factories. They're all suddenly working on this. And I'm like, why?
Yeah. Samsung says it's able to fold at least 200,000 times, which works out, if you keep it for 5 years, that's 100 times a day.
Hmm.
It's going to feature a 16-megapixel ultra-wide camera, as well as a 12-megapixel wide-angle and telephoto camera on the rear, and a 10-megapixel camera on the cover for selfies. So lots of cameras on the device, too. called the Galaxy Fold. It's going to be able to run three apps at once, and it'll be using the app continuity system to adjust these apps for when you move between tablet and phone mode. So they say also that apps like WhatsApp, Office, and YouTube have been all optimized for the new display in these new modes. And Samsung has been working with Google to ensure that Android 9 Pie fully supports this display mechanic.
Okay.
So
let's hope all the apps themselves will support it too.
Yeah, that's of course the bigger deal, right? And you know, I think if this article came out on April 1st, I think we'd all be having a good laugh about this.
So. Everyone would believe in that, or not? Yeah, everyone joke.
Yeah. So.
I just hope they get the battery right, because that could be a problem.
Yeah, right. Samsung exploding ones, I assume, is what you're referring to.
Yeah, it just seems like this would take a lot of power, you know?
Yeah, there was some stats on the battery here. There's two batteries that are separated by the fold, but produce a combined total of 4380 milliamp hours.
So that's, jeez.
Yeah, that's huge. That's tablet power. So I don't know. We'll have to wait and see what happens when this arrives. But $1,980 or 2,000 euros, and it'll be available in Europe on May 3rd. So I know we all scratched our heads when Apple brought out the huge, expensive flagship devices last year, but this is something else entirely. So,
this is even more.
Yeah. I don't know. I personally don't like it, and like you guys, I hope it's just a fad. Fingers crossed. All right. Our next piece of tech news is a follow-up to something we talked about in 2018, and this was the Razer Store, and the idea behind this was that Razer would be having its own game store that you would be able to purchase with either real money or Razer Silver. Though after less than a year, Razer has announced that they are closing their digital game store at the end of the month in terms of what they're saying as realignment plans, which is basically corporate speak for saying it didn't pan out exactly the way they anticipated. And, I mean, we said this at the beginning. How is this going to compete with Steam?
Well, it wasn't. I mean, and especially now with the new competition coming from Epic and some other
Discord.
Discord, yeah. So, it was probably destined to fail, which I think is what we even predicted, wasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Having a game store is just incredibly difficult.
Yeah, and I mean, Steam's got it, and I think the only thing keeping the Epic Game Store up at this point is Fortnite. So.
Well, but they do have some. They offer some top notch games for free, so I can't overlook that.
Okay.
I mean,
I haven't had a look at that, so I'm not aware of
the Epic Store. Is also getting a lot of. From what you see on the articles, is that there are quite a few games that are going to publish themselves in the Epic Game Store because of like the percentage Epic takes is much smaller than what Steam does. So it just directly translates to revenue for the games company, really, which seems to attract quite a few people.
Yeah, I'm not counting Epic out, man. This could be Coke and Pepsi all over again. You never know. We could get. It's possible.
So what does that make Razer then?
RC?
All right.
Well, in all fairness, I do hope there is going to be a good competitor for Steam, though.
Yes.
Because I think that's what we need. Steam is getting lazy.
Yeah, Steam definitely needs competitors. You know, if not on the distribution end, at least on the community end, I'd say. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, I don't know if anybody here plays Call of Duty, but we do have a Call of Duty story this week pertaining to Black Ops 4. Loot boxes. You know, you buy a game for what is $80 here in Canada. I'm not sure what a game like this retails for in the UK or European Union, Montporky. Something like Call of Duty.
It's about €60.
Okay.
Pounds, I wouldn't know, but
that's pretty expensive.
That's what it is here, about $60. Yeah.
But that's like every mainstream game, isn't it? Or like AAA title.
Yeah.
Except,
and that's just the vanilla version. You know, that's not the digital deluxe and the that's without Ubisoft in it to death. You know, where we hack it up into a million pieces, sell a million packages of it.
And we learned this week that the loot box system in Call of Duty Black Ops is going to be the only way to unlock some competitive skins and whatnot that are in-game, available for a £39.99 British pound season pass. There are also cosmetics up for direct sale, and the loot boxes, I think each loot box goes for £1.79, and quite frankly, this is infuriating many players online in that they spend all this money on a huge blockbuster game like Call of Duty Black Ops 4, and then, oh, there's points of progression in this game that you can't complete unless you buy the season pass or you buy loot boxes.
And didn't they take the lesson from EA last year with Battlefront 2? I mean, this isn't going to fly. Most players will totally look the other way when it comes to cosmetics. That's not a problem.
Overwatch, Fortnite?
Yeah, you cannot tie progression. They're going to have an uproar on their hands.
Yeah, and, you know, I think at the end of the day, it speaks a lot to the series. And I think what they're hoping is that everybody who buys the Call of Duty games probably buys each one in succession if they're huge fans of the series, so much so that they'll just buy it and accept it as is and carry on. But, you know, the very fact there's a post on this and it doesn't seem like it's going this way. I think we're going to have a lot of discussions in the coming months about what this means and whether or not large games like Black Ops should be going down this path. So.
Well, and isn't, I mean, different countries in the EU already cracking down
Belgium,
on this?
Belgium.
I mean, so why would you go in the complete opposite direction? I don't know. I guess they're just going to squeeze what pennies they can while they can. But it's unfortunate for the players.
I find it like...
Go ahead.
I'd like to read articles about monetization and everything. And, like, yes, it is getting... in Belgium, you need to display the odds of winning and everything now, kinds of things. But, like, what I found very... I read an article about it, which I found very interesting, which kind of touches this a little bit. It's like loot boxes. Well, if you look at what they are... They are very similar to when we were kids, when we were buying packs of Pokemon cards or when we were buying...
that's it. Exactly.
Yeah, that's cards. Like, it is exactly the same. Like, you don't know what you're going to get. And it might be good, it might be bad. And that's also allowed. And that's something that we as kids enjoyed a lot. So why do we suddenly have to ban it in games but not... In real life, or should we ban those two, or should we allow both? Like, I think there's a bit of a measurement. We should view both of these cases equal and not allow one and not the other, or the other way around.
Yeah, and you know, I completely agree with that too. You know, in some ways, I also think it's because it's easier to purchase a virtual good than it is to purchase a physical good.
Well, I mean, I would have been all for some consistency. Like, if I would have known what the odds were of getting a good card in a Magic pack, I would have been happy. At least I would have known the odds. I mean, I don't know. It's Brave New World we're in, right?
Yeah. And you know, it's that's exactly a games as a service. And the question is, you know, with free to play games, how can you monetize and whatnot? And I think we're all very fortunate to be in the situation that RuneScape is in that, you know, when you look at other games out there, mobile games and such, it could be a lot worse than it actually is. But RuneScape does it fairly well. And that's something I always point out to everybody is that if you look at other games, you look at EVE Online here, you look at World of Tanks, you can buy one vehicle for $70 or $80 US in that game. So it's just absurd the way some of these things go. But, you know, I think Black Ops and Call of Duty players are going to need to have a look at this and consider if they want to get the next iteration from Activision.
Well, you know, they were smart enough to not drop it when the game launched, because that would have...
That would have been a boatload of PR that wouldn't have sunk them, but it would have been pretty bad.
So I guess they
bad.
Did learn something from EA then, right?
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for Tech News this week. Let's start wrapping this up then. Let's start with the achievements of the week. I believe Mod Porky has the first four. So
I've got the honors of doing the first four. Up the Iron 05 has achieved 99th thieving on February 19th. Congratulations to you. We've got Omega, who has 120 mining. He's been working very hard with the new mining and smithing update. He achieved that on February the 18th. The Quiver has got 99 invention on February the 18th. And then last but not least, from me at least, we've got a few more. We've got Mr. Jingles, or Mr. _ Jingles, who achieved 120 prayer on February 17th.
Nicely done, everyone. Next up, we have Ro-Ho-Ho with 99 runecrafting on February 17th. Xenon Ray got 120 constitution on the 16th. Derpalt New got 99 runecrafting on February 16th. Frore with 99 magic on February 16th. And Chaz 5100 with 99 magic also on February 16th.
Did you now skip Derpalt Neokes?
I said his with 99 runecrafting.
I'm falling asleep, apparently.
Oh, dear.
Uh-oh. We're almost there. Then we have a collection from Frar with 99 thieving, 99 ranged, 99 fishing, and 99 farming, all on February 15th. If Frar isn't maxed yet, they are on their way.
That's going to happen on Double XP weekend, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. Double XP weekend is around the corner.
Yep.
And we wait for the wall of text awaiting us next week in terms of achievements for Double XP weekend.
Yes,
well, that's going to be a massive one.
Oh, it's usually interesting.
Normally, we can't get through them all.
No.
Really?
Yeah, because that's how many there are. I think last Double XP weekend we had like 70 or 80 of them.
Yeah, it's like pages. Yeah, but great job, everybody! Congratulations,
nicely
great
done.
Achievements.
Nicely
congratulations.
Done. And you know, as with podcast tradition, we're going to wrap this up with a pick of the week, and it seems fitting to hand this pick of the week over to Mod Porky. So, what do you got for us?
So, I've gone for one of the things that I like. So, I've gone for a quirky movie that I'm very keen on seeing very soon, which is the Lego Movie 2. Called The Second Part as a subtitle, released on September 6th in the Netherlands, and I believe the day after in all the other countries almost, where we follow Eden in another beautiful Avenger with equally as good music that we all know and love, and it's probably encased in our memories that we can sing out loud anytime it needs. And just to read out the intro, the thing they write, it's been 5 years since everything was awesome. There we go, we've got our song reference. And the citizens are facing a huge new threat, Lego Duplo invaders from outer space, wrecking everything faster than they can rebuild. Go watch that in cinemas now, I would say.
You know, I haven't seen the first Lego movie, but I've heard it's pretty good. And, you know, based on what we hear here and what I've seen so far, previews for the second also seems like a good one. And, you know, I think there's something in these movies also, from what I've heard, for people of all ages, I'd assume, too. Good social commentary and the like.
Absolutely. Like what I really like about movies like these is that they usually have like a very easy to grasp story, but there's usually a nice deeper meaning to them as well. And then in the end, like the final act, everything comes together. And I'm always like, oh, they had a very good idea. They did that really well. That's why I really love those quirky movies and like these animated movies and things. And also in particular for like the Lego movies, how they've built the world out of Lego and how they've animated that and how they've done those things. It's just fantastic and amazing to see. I believe they even do some parts with stop motion, but I could be wrong.
Oh, wow.
And that's something you don't hear anymore in 2019. No. So that is an old art, to say the least.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right. That sounds good. Lego Movie 2. What have we been up to on RS? Tannis, what you been up to this week? Obviously, double XP weekend prep. What else?
A little bit, yeah. Well, unfortunately, I've been fighting a cold or sinus infection. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but WebMD tells me it's one of the two. So I've had less time than I usually do. But I actually went back to doing some Slayer because I remember when I told you I was never going to take my masterwork off once I got it done.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't. And it's probably smelly right now. So I've just been doing some Slayer and, been hitting up the farm here and there and got everything, plants in the ground in anticipation of double XP tomorrow. So, yeah.
Alrighty. How about you, Mod Porky? What have you been up to on RS?
I'm really enjoying the thieving stuff at the moment. So I'm working on safecracking. I actually achieved. Okay. I don't know which level I achieved, but I've been doing quite a bit of safecracking lately, and I'm not sure whether I want to aim for 99 thieving this weekend or not. I'm a bit split between whether I should be healthy and go outside or keep going for that XP, really, like make it like unhealthy amounts of time that I'm going to invest into it. But that's what I've been up to.
Alrighty.
Nice. Shane, are you going to tell him about your safe cracking experience?
Oh yeah. When we were discussing the safe cracking update last year, We had Tannis and Sirion on the podcast. Sirion's one of our other hosts, and we were discussing it from a mechanical perspective. And you know, I didn't notice this at first, but you get more optimal XP if you click on the safe when it flashes. And of course, the blind person pointed that out to the both of us.
that's one of the first things I noticed.
So that's a good laugh always with safe cracking. As for me on RS this week, I have completed the necessary ingredients to get 120 Herb Lore. It's going to be about 5,500 Ceridolin Brews and 1,000 Super Melee Potions. Of those 5,500 Cerebrews, I farmed about 4,200 Toad Flax on my own. So there's going to be a nice amount of profit coming in off that. So we'll be reaping the benefits of that.
Good timing, Shane, because you might need some of those Monday.
And you know, obviously, I'm not going to use 5,500, but I can dump into that supply and sell a few to the crazy PBMers.
Uh huh.
So that should be good fun. But beyond that, double XP weekend, I'll just dip into the protein supply. And I have a ton of protein cogs. I think it's somewhere around 4,000 protein cogs that have just been stacking up over time to do.
Jeez.
Yeah, wow. they just stack up. They just stack up daily keys. But aside from that, really enjoying the gem rework from last week that saw the health reduced of the gem rocks and Prith. My record for 1 hour is getting 3 onyxes in a single hour after it was fixed. So that was
You're the luckiest player I've ever known. Like I'm glad you're not a PVMer because then I would probably not like you as much.
Maybe we should
walking away
that.
With you'd be walking away with like. You know, just all the stuff, all of it, like wands, orbs. Yeah.
And, you know, Parnassius actually got 4 onyxes in 1 hour after it was fixed.
Ooh, holy cow.
Yeah. So gem mining's pretty good these days. Even if you don't get onyxes, you can get dragon stones from them. So.
Oh, nice.
Well, I believe that sums up this episode of RSBNB Update. So thank you very much, Mod Porky, for joining us. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you for inviting me.
And if you guys want full show notes for this episode, they're available at update.rsbnb.com. You can also join us in our friends chat for Double XP Weekend, which is Bits Bytes. And if you want to post your achievements. You can join our Discord at rsbnb.com/discord. We'll probably be in there on the Saturday night doing RuneScape-related things. But nonetheless, have a look and see what we're all up to. It's going to be a fun double XP weekend. And with that being said, we'll see you guys next week for Elite Dungeon 3. Take care, everyone.
See ya.
Bye-bye.